Chapter 9, Louisiana's Antebellum Politics, Commerce, and Culture. Louis Moreau Gottschalk was born in New Orleans in 1829. His father was a businessman who had immigrated to Louisiana from London. His mother was native-born, but his grandmother had fled Saint-Domingue before settling in New Orleans. Louis spent his childhood in the area known today as the French Quarter. Nearby was an open field where slaves gathered on Sundays. On this traditional day of rest for slaves, they socialized, held their own market, played drums and homemade instruments, and performed dances that had their origins in Africa. These lively Sunday gatherings resulted in the area being called Congo Square. Gottschalk had not only heard but was inspired by the music and dancing in Congo Square. In his early teens, he wrote a song for piano titled Bamboula Danse de Negra. Its call-and-response rhythms paid tribute to the African drumming and singing he heard in Congo Square as a child. Gottschalk was also an exciting concert performer who made his public debut at age 11. His family realized he needed additional training, so they sent him to Paris at age 13. However, when he sought admission to the Paris Conservatory, the director reportedly turned him away. He commented that no great artist could come from the United States, which was only a country of steam engines. The director was right that by the 1840s, America had become a place of great economic drive and innovation, but he was wrong about Gottschalk, who in a few years' time became internationally celebrated. He traveled tens of thousands of miles across Europe and to various countries in Central and South America, sometimes playing two or three concerts a day. In 1869, he collapsed during a performance in Brazil and died 3 weeks later of a malarial infection he had contracted in his travels. Gottschalk's short life displays many themes that also characterized life in Louisiana during the years before the Civil War. As with his background, the state's population became even more diverse in the years between 1820 and 1860, as native-born and immigrant people mixed and mingled. Louisiana's economy, which had struggled in the colonial era, also began to thrive. In fact, in these decades, the state's economy grew at astounding rates, and many people became fabulously wealthy. It is impossible to understand the years between 1820 and 1860 without appreciating how the state's people shaped one another. Free and slave, native-born and immigrant, though Louisianians did not always interact peacefully, they shaped one another's lives, fortunes, and cultures. Through his music, Louis Moreau Gottschalk shared the variety and diversity of Louisiana life with music lovers around the world. In this chapter, we will examine Louisiana's politics, economy, and culture in the years between 1820 and 1860. We will explore the debates that shape politics and review the diverse activities that generated economic growth. Finally, we will consider the social conditions that made Louisiana a place of promise, but also of peril for those who came here, whether seeking opportunity or because they had no choice. Section 1. Antebellum Politics. As you read, look for how ethnic rivalries between Creoles and Americans and between people in different regions shaped Louisiana politics in the antebellum era. The changing location of Louisiana's capital, characteristics of the Democratic, Whig, and American parties, limits placed on women's right to vote and to control their property, two constitutions of the antebellum period, terms, antebellum, franchise, universal manhood suffrage, internal improvements, head and master statutes. Andrew Jackson served as President of the United States for two terms, 1829 to 1837, and changed the nation's politics in profound ways. He was so influential that some historians have come to call this period the Age of Jackson. Other historians refer to the years between 1820 and 1860 as the antebellum, before the war period, because they are the decades that preceded the American Civil War. During this eventful era, Louisiana's politics sometimes followed national trends. On the whole, however, the state remained a place where politics were shaped principally by concerns, conditions, and cultures that were specific to Louisiana. Politics and ethnicity. Creoles and Americans remained the leading competitors for political power throughout the antebellum period, but the informal power-sharing arrangement through which the office of governor would alternate between an American and a Creole fell apart during the 1820s. For the 8 years between 1820 and 1828, Americans dominated the office. Thomas Robertson, who was born in Virginia and first came to Louisiana as an appointee of Thomas Jefferson, was elected in 1820. Many Creoles thought he focused on adopting laws and policies that favored Americans. Robertson resigned the governorship in 1824, but was followed in office by two more Americans. The Creole-American rivalry became even more complicated when a member of a new immigrant group gained the governor's office in 1828. Pierre d'Urbigny was born in France and was foreign French, the term used to describe French-seeking immigrants who came to Louisiana directly from France beginning in the 1820s. Like the Acadians and the refugees from Saint-Domingue before them, the foreign French were fleeing warfare and political unrest. They were drawn to Louisiana because of its still thriving French language and culture. D'Urbigny died in a carriage accident shortly after taking office. The next elected governor was the Creole, André Bienvenu Ramon, who served two full terms, 1831 to 1835 and 1839 to 1843, separated by the term of the American Edward Douglas White. Ramon is credited with being one of the state's most effective antebellum governors. In his first term, he focused on improving the quality of levees in the state's rudimentary, basic, undeveloped system of roads. He also supported the development of the state's first railroads. Regional tensions. Besides the ethnic rivalries among Creoles, Americans, and the foreign French, there were other tensions that affected the state's politics. Major disagreements developed between people who lived in different areas in the state. Voters in North Louisiana believed that New Orleans, which they saw as the Creole capital, had too much influence over the state's politics. They tried to address this unfairness by moving the capital away from New Orleans in the belief that this would reduce the city's power. In 1823, English-speaking legislatures made their first attempt to change the capital's location. They were not successful until 1825, at which time they were able to pass legislation moving the capital to Donaldsonville. It took 5 years to complete the construction of a facility in which they could meet. Despite these efforts, the legislature met in Donaldsonville for only one term and returned to New Orleans the following year. In 1847, the rural legislatures tried again to move the state government. This time, they selected Baton Rouge as the new capital. In order to protect their political victory, they allocated funds for the design and construction of an impressive capitol building. Architect James Dakin designed the distinctive, castle-like building that still stands on a high bluff overlooking the Mississippi River. Although the building's design received mixed reviews, it would remain the state's capital until the Civil War sent the state government into exile. The building was occupied by Union troops and was badly damaged by fire in late 1862. Separate municipalities. Political tensions were not confined to disputes between New Orleans and the rest of the state. In fact, competing ethnic and neighborhood identities within the city splintered city governance and led to the creation of three separate municipalities. The French Quarter, largely inhabited by Creoles, became the first district. The second district was composed of neighborhoods above Canal Street and was the area identified with Americans who had settled there in large numbers. The third district was downriver from the French Quarter and was identified with working-class people, many of them recent immigrants. Each district had its own separate council. Thus, the state's biggest city was essentially administered as though it were three distinct entities between 1836 and 1852. Political parties. Ethnicity and regional identities were two factors that shaped political alignments, but as the 1830s began, identification with political parties also played a role in how voters made their decisions. Democrats. Andrew Jackson's presidency lasted only 8 years, but differences in how people felt about Jackson and his policies defined the nation's political party system through the late 1850s. Those who supported Jacksoncame to be known as Jacksonian Democrats or Democratic Republicans. Over time, they came to be known simply as Democrats. Members of that party tended to favor smaller government and programs designed to support common people and their interests. rather than the interests of businesses or banks. Democrats also tended to prefer widespread political participation rather than a narrow franchise, right to vote, that favored property owners and the wealthy. They sought a broad franchise with few, if any, requirements for voting, so long as one was a free white man who had reached the age of 21. This approach to granting voting privileges to the masses of American men is referred to as universal manhood suffrage. Whigs. The main faction that emerged to oppose the Democrats coalesced, came together, into the Whig Party in the mid-1830s. In contrast to the Democrats, the Whigs tended to favor business and banking interests over the rights of the common man. Whigs also sought government support for the development of the infrastructure, roads, bridges, canals, etc., which they referred to as internal improvements. Whigs believed internal improvements would make doing business easier and make the nation more prosperous. In Louisiana, many sugar planters were drawn to the Whig Party because of its support of a sugar tariff. Sugar planters liked the idea of a tax on imported sugar that would make their locally grown sugar more competitive. The Whigs remained a viable political party until the mid-1850s, when tensions over sectional politics and the expansion of slavery into new territories split the party into northern and southern factions. The American Party. The American Party, called the Know-Nothings, emerged as a party hostile to new immigrants. As citizens who were born in the United States, they believed that people who had been here a generation or longer should have a greater say in politics than newly arriving immigrants. They also believed Democrats exploited immigrants, particularly working-class Germans and Irish, in order to expand their voting base. Because most of the Irish who immigrated to the United States in the antebellum period were Catholic, members of the American Party were also known to be anti-Catholic. Party members were called Know-Nothings because, when asked about the party and its priorities, the members often replied, "I know nothing." By the late 1840s, large numbers of new immigrants played a tremendous role in the nation and in Louisiana. Irish and German immigrants made up half the population of New Orleans by 1850. Despite the American Party's numerical disadvantage, its candidates, who employed a combination of force and voter intimidation, controlled politics in New Orleans from 1854 until the outbreak of the Civil War in 1861. Few rights for women. Even with the universal manhood suffrage and a growing diversity in political parties, the vote for women was nearly a century in the future. Although virtually all free white men gained the vote during the antebellum period, women were not believed to be interested in politics or capable of understanding political issues. The small numbers of women who did seek the vote were largely confined to the urban North. Most people believed that a woman's proper place was in the home. In Louisiana, this belief took the form of head and master statutes. Under these laws, when a woman married, her husband became her head and master, as her father had been before the marriage. Due to civil law practices dating from the colonial period, a woman or her family did have the option to obtain a separate property agreement before marriage, through which the property and wealth she brought to the marriage would remain her own. If a woman failed to make a separate property agreement beforehand, all of the property she brought to the marriage became community property, and a husband could dispose of it without his wife's knowledge or permission. Two state constitutions. The two state constitutions adopted during the antebellum period reflected the tense competition among political parties and between New Orleans and the rest of the state. The Constitution of 1845 reflected the Democrats' desire to write universal manhood suffrage into the state's fundamental law. Democrats also succeeded at limiting state aid to private enterprises. The tensions between New Orleans and the rest of the state were also reflected in the 1845 document. Democrats in New Orleans preferred to use the total number of registered voters to determine the apportionment or distribution of seats in the state legislature. Planters preferred that total population numbers, including slaves, be used as the basis for determining those numbers. The 1845 Constitution came to a compromise by allocating seats in the State House of Representatives based on registered voters and in the Senate based on total population, including slaves. As a compromise document, the Constitution of 1845 pleased almost no one, so a new Constitution was adopted in 1852. Although the new constitution retained the Democratic priority of universal manhood suffrage, it reasserted Whig priorities like government support for business endeavors, particularly those related to banking and internal improvements. Whigs argued that roads and railroads would expand opportunities for commerce and the development of wealth. Special feature, Zachary Taylor. To date, Zachary Taylor is the only Louisiana candidate to be elected President of the United States. Taylor, who was born in Virginia and raised in Kentucky, first came to Louisiana in 1809 in the service of the U.S. Army. He was posted to several different areas of the state before being assigned to Fort Robertson near Baton Rouge in 1822. While serving in the heart of Louisiana's plantation region, Taylor saw the wealth that was possible from a well-run plantation. He purchased several parcels of land in both Louisiana and Mississippi, including a 380-acre plantation in Feliciana Parish. At one point, he owned more than 300 slaves. Taylor generally hired overseers to run his plantations while he continued his military service. He served in the War of 1812 and also fought in several conflicts against Native Americans in the 1830s. His most notable military successes came in the Mexican-American War. This conflict, which began in 1846, had its roots in the contest over Texas. Mexico gained independence from Spain in 1821. To protect its own independence, Mexico offered land grants in Texas to Americans who were willing to become Mexican citizens and Catholics. Over time, many of these settlers decided they wanted to break away from Mexico. Tensions began in the early 1830s and resulted in the outbreak of open warfare between Mexico and the Anglo-American settlers in late 1835. That conflict was resolved in early 1836, but the question of whether Texas would be independent or become a part of the United States remained. Although Americans disagreed about whether Texas should be slave or free territory, the United States annexed Texas and declared it an American state in December 1845. Mexico's leaders were angry, not just because of the annexation, but also because they disagreed about where the border was located. The United States marked its territorial claim at the Rio Grande River. Mexico insisted that the border was 150 miles further north at the Nueces River. Zachary Taylor was in charge of American troops in Mexico when the Mexican-American War began in 1846. The war continued for 16 months. American victory was achieved in part because of a series of impressive military triumphs led by Taylor. Taylor's successes against the Mexican military earned him great praise and national prominence. Taylor's fame led to the White House, much as Andrew Jackson's fame had led him there. Taylor was elected in 1848 and inaugurated the nation's 11th president in 1849, in part because of his own ambivalent, indecisive, contradictory views about slavery. Taylor took a hands-off approach to congressional debates about its expansion into new territories. And though he ran and won as a candidate of the Whig Party, he insisted that his first loyalty was to all the nation's people rather than to any political party. Taylor died in office early in 1850 and was succeeded by his vice president, Millard Fillmore. Although Taylor's life was extraordinary, his settlement and successes mirror those of many other Anglo-American migrants. Taylor came to Louisiana on the nation's business and stayed to enhance his own economic opportunities. A military man and a planter, Taylor became a Whig and a president, the only one elected from the state of Louisiana, at least so far. Do you think another Louisiana citizen will be elected president in this century?